when everybody started to come.
So,
well, actually, when I were here and start to meet the first old Latvians and all, my husband said, you should have some kind of a place here. There will be more people coming now, so they can turn to, you know, for information. Mm-hmm. So that's how it came. Then all the old Latvians got together that had been here already for 30 years before me, you see. And then we started the mountain.
In mind?
Mainly it was meant to be when the newcomers, when they were starting to arrive, that they have somewhere to turn for information, where to go and what to do and how to meet other people. Mm. There wasn't anything really particularly. And then we started a little bit parties and get together and things like that, yeah.
Sure.
In 1944?
Yeah. Went to Germany then, yeah. We went straight to Germany because, let me see, this is again, I wasn't at home. I grew up on a farm, but I don't know what was the reason for that, but I went to my uncle's place, which is on the other side of end of Latvia. And so then the Russian front was broke through and was only 15 kilometers from the farm. So we sat, not second time, under Russians again. So we got out, and my uncle had some friends and he had some relatives in Germany, and that's how it came that we decided to go to Germany. I had my sister's kids, which were just little, you know, in 10 and 12 years old, and they had gone back to Riga because that's where their business was, and they couldn't get back because the front cut us off now. So 2 months went by, and my sister and her husband, they didn't know where her kids were, where we were, because we couldn't get in touch with them. See, I was young those days, so they always pushed me with some bribes or some ham or some vodka or something to some of the businessmen to arrange for a place on the boat to go. That's how it came about. Don't know the name of the boat. It was a funny boat. It was something for dredging, I think, because it had two ends of the boat and the middle was just like a walkway, nothing in between the two ends. It was a weird boat. When we started out, the boat stopped because there were U-boats, and they said somewhere, and so they didn't dare to move or make any noise. So we waited for a whole night before we could get on again and go toward the Germany, because some of the boats got bombed and you know, but lucky we got on the other end and we went. This friend had two aunts living in Germany. They were two old maids, so living all by themselves. And the whole shipload of people arriving to their place, because he had given their address, you know. The poor girls, they were holding their heads. What do we do now? Had a place to go already, yeah. And then arranged right away and with the authority there. And they gave us room in a gymnasium, put up some double beds or triple or whatever they were. And we stayed there quite a while, I think. Goldberg. I found it on the map. Pinnamunde. But I can't find it anywhere because it was I think it had something to do with the army or some kind of a harbor that was why we came, but it's near Rostock somewhere there. Stay just for a month or two, just, yeah. And my uncle and his wife, they were there too. Sure, we were all worried, but we were all together, and nobody asked if you were particularly worried or not. That's how it was, and that's how it, all the gold bag is here. She arrived, I think, a couple of months more. Well, it was a fair month and a half or 2 months later they received our letters. The mail worked even in those days. It still, letters came. We wrote to Latvia and they found out where we were, and they came to Germany. Near Valka. No, the Latvian map. The city was in Estonia, and half was Latvia. Something like here in Canada. The what's her name? The city. I tell you, I'm getting Alzheimer's. I can't remember all these names. They were farmers in Valka. Went to high school and finished high school there, and that was something too. You see, the Russians took my parents to Siberia, and it was just exam time. It was the last grade in high school, and I still had two exams, algebra and German. The German was no problem for me because those days I could speak German fluently. But I thought about the algebra, I was worried. I had no idea. So my oldest sister at that time was with my parents on the farm, and she had come into the city and said, "Something funny is happening tonight. There's something going to be, you know." We were under Russians at that time. She said, "You better come home and let's see." I said, "Okay." And we were on the bikes and started to drive. And I was a little way out of the city already when I said, "No, tomorrow I have algebra. I have to study a little bit more. I better go back and do and so in house, yeah." And by that time we already were thrown out. Our farm was taken away. So my parents were in my dad's younger brother's farm. All the both families together there, you see. So next morning I woke up, somebody was knocking on my window, and I got up, I ran to the window, and there was my boyfriend. And the woman that looked in the boarding house, you know, she looked after us. She was very strict. That if we went to a party or somewhere, he had to disappear already halfway home because she would come meet me, you see. And that just wasn't done. And I said, "How the heck, why is he here at the window?" And he said, "Your parents have been arrested and taken away. Have you heard anything?" I said, "Nothing at all." So I said, "You go to the post office and maybe you can phone them, the farm, find out what's happening. In the meantime, I will get dressed and I will be with you." And then he came back and he said, "Oh no. They are all arrested, and they are on the trains already. You can't get to them anymore." But they are looking for you, because I was still 19 years old at that time, and by law I still belong to the family, you see. So I said, well, let's go out to the farm and see what's happening there. And we started to drive. And at that time, my boyfriend was working as an orderly in a hospital. And because he was an orderly, the Russians gave him a permit to carry a gun. Other people, you see, couldn't do that. And as we were going, we were cut a shortcut. We were not going on the highways and good roads, you know. We ran into some kind of an army business, and they right away wanted to shoot us, you know, to kill us, and we are spies, and why we coming here, you see. And I don't know, Sasha, at that time, he had that much of an idea that maybe that helped. And he said he was working and he had a permit for a gun and he was okay, that he was like a communist, you know, like a Russian dude. And they let us go. And we got through. And when I got to the farm, there was my sister. She was pumping water, and I can still see her, the body language, that something horrible has happened to you, how you have absolutely no strength, but still trying to do, you know. That I knew that really something very bad has happened, you know. And that night they arrested my mother, my father, my father's brother and his wife and his two kids, because they were home. Because they were a little bit better than the rest of the people, you know. I suppose so. No. Nothing to do with German. My father was very what to say, very much for Latvia nationalist. And he was a Latvian consul in Estonia and Valka. That was his job. And a farm, and you see, anybody that was a little bit better off and had some property or something, they were targeted to, you know. It didn't really matter what you did or not. But he was always involved in politics and fighting for Latvia, you know, and doing things. And I heard 14 years later, you know, we didn't get any news about that at all. And by that, my older sister, her husband had died, and her child, and she was all by herself. And she decided when we left Latvia, she said, I am all by myself, I will stay here. What can they do to me? At least I will be here if, in case our parents come back, then I will be there, you see. And she stayed behind, so. But she had dug up all the treasures, whatever we had, and some money or some silver or gold or whatever it was. It was buried somewhere. And she had dug that up and had gone to Russia. And with bribing, she got mother back. So the last years, mother came back. And, well, when they had left for Siberia, mom had become very sick. You see, they were not together. They were separated right away. The men were on one train and women were on another train. And she had been very, very sick, and whatever doctors there were, they had given up on her that she's going to die, so off the train. And there had been a Russian woman on a farmer, and she said, I'll look after her. And she had looked after my mom, and with home remedies had brought her back to health. And mom had worked on that farm looking after her children. And when Mom was 82 years old, I have pictures of that, where she came from Siberia to visit Mom on her birthday to Latvia. So you see, there are good people everywhere, besides bad people. To get me, I was hiding, and somebody suggested, you see, I had been going with this guy already for 3 or 4 years. We have been boyfriends and girlfriends. And so they suggested if I got married, had a different name, they wouldn't take me then. And I was so scared. It sounds silly now when to say. But Sash said, okay, let's go to the city hall and get married. I said, you go to the city hall and get married. I'm not going. He went and he came back. He said, no, I can't do it alone. You have to come too.
And did you go?
Yeah. And we got married. He went to work. I went to the high school. It was completely empty except the secretary was there to get my diploma. I thought that should be important. Well, it was weird feeling to go into the big building where there's nobody there. It's completely empty, you know. How do you mean? What happened? There was this time when the Russians went ahead of Germans, and the Germans couldn't catch up fast enough. There was an empty time. And so those very confusing times was on. Well, and I was married 2 weeks when the Russians came back and they shot him. It happened crazy. And then I was already married, the widow. Then I was confirmed after the Germans took over. And we got our farm back, and my sister had to work on one farm, and I worked on the other farm. And I just out of school, 19 years old, my school chums, my friends, they were loose ends too. They didn't know what to do, no jobs, nothing. They came and they helped on the farm, and we worked. What do you mean? Yes. No, I just found out that some of the from my class had been taken with the parents. They had a dry goods store, and apparently she came back too, I heard. But she wasn't all right. Something was very wrong with her, because she had eaten the wild radishes in Siberia, and those are deadly. She had survived, but she was not all right in her head anymore, kind of, apparently. But there's a book written about that thing, that Melanie Vanax. I have got the book. It's all written about that story and what happened. And it was my mother. So she knew my mother, this woman that wrote the story. And that was the horrible train where the mother, with the four kids, she stabbed them all to death, killed them all in the train, because she wasn't going to Siberia. Oh, there are all kinds of weird things happened. It's sometimes when you start to think and talk about it, it seems in that short time it couldn't happen all, but it did somehow. Right away. Right. When the Germans came and where I lived then in Volkow, see, I was a widow already by this time when they arrived. And they stopped right in front of our house, and I think it was lunchtime, and they put the back of the truck down, and they took out plates and had knives and forks and were eating like human beings. We were there looking at our mouth hanging open. Well, I had never forget that when the Russians, they were not, hadn't, the war hadn't started yet, but they had taken already a part of there of Latvia, they were already in. And I asked my uncle, I said, what do you think, but it was close to the war starting, you see. I said, what do you think will happen, the Germans or the Russians? What do you think is better? He says, the Russians are more kind-hearted people, so maybe they'd be better, you see. But it didn't turn out quite that way. Mm-hmm. I'm sure the Russians are all good people, but it's the politics that communism that did Stalin and all. I still don't like to see the red flag. It makes my heart cringe. But as a Russian people, if I met like you and I think they're nice people. Just see, in the German time, there were the prisoners of war, and our farm had two buildings. Was the new house and the old house, like the workers' house was the old house. And they billeted the workers in the old house. And guards were looking after them, and they worked on the railroad. When they arrived, they were starved. They hadn't had any food, or I don't know, just prisoners of war. And I guess they had to be deloused first thing, and they were all sent, we had a sauna. So they had to go to the sauna. And you know, they got undressed completely naked. They had to throw their clothes on before they went in to get washed. And I could see they were like skeletons with big stomachs. You know how it is when you're starving, like the Somalian people now, like that. And my first husband's younger sister, she was a spunky little girl. She took on the job to feed them, to cook for them. And she couldn't speak a word of Russian. You have word or two. And but she organized them and got them. She made soups, and really good soups with lots of vegetables and some meat and all. They ate like crazy, and they threw up, and they ate and threw up, you know, till their stomach settled down. I remember she needed some water. And the Russian word for the water was voda. So she tells him, voda, that guy goes and gets some cold water. No, she wanted the hot water, so she pours it on the ground. Voda, go to her. She was really some character there. And work on our farm. No, they worked on the railroad. But they lived there. Women and lots of fun, really, those the prisoners of war. Yeah. They put Johnny there with a big mustache and we played a bad trick. Now I'm nope. We can talk for days. Bad trick on the cook, famous cook. She was so tired she went to bed early, and we were all still awake. And I think it came to 11 o'clock, but about 25 to 11, you know, it looks like it's 7 o'clock in the morning if you are sleepy and wake up. They said, that you're late, you have to go and give them breakfast and get up. She got up and everything ready and went. And those guys, they're sitting, they were baking the potatoes in the ashes or something. They couldn't understand, was she coming middle of the night practically and chasing them all out to go to war? Oh, she was so mad at us. You mean they never liked us? We never, I don't think that ever liked. I only remember how much my father hated. In school we had some kind of a project to write about something about Russian politics. I don't even remember what the subject was, but I know I got a prize for it, and it was a book about communism or something. And I was very proud. I came home and see, I got a prize, the book. And father didn't say one word. He took the book, and there was open fire in the fireplace. He just threw the book in there and said, never bring this junk into our house. That was it. So my prize went up the smoke. To Waren am Warensee, the place was called. And we were told we're going to be living in a hotel. When we got there, this hotel, there had been chickens living in it. It was dirty. And the roof, you could see, when you lay down, you looked up, you could see the stars through the roof. And boy, did we ever have to clean the first day before we could even get in. And we were all just women with children. This was the very beginning. There were really no men at all. And we had these straw mattresses all the way around. And the little kids, they started to cry at one end and went all the way around. And then it stopped for a minute, and then it started the crying come back all the way again, around the room again, the other end. So you didn't get too much sleep. Not particularly. I think just the city government, whatever it was, the city hall, the guy. And again, because I could speak German, so any arrangements that had to be made, I got always shoved ahead and pushed again to do these kind of things. And then this guy, he was an older fellow already, I don't know, somehow took the liking or what. And he brought me two bottles of juice, so that, see, I had the Hurtis kids too with me at that time, my aunt there. I didn't dare to show to anybody. I thought they'd be jealous. What am I getting it for, you know, kind of thing. And it was crazy. Well, and this address sounded so famous, this hotel, when we wrote the letters to Latvia, to my sister to come. And they expected to say something nice. They didn't believe their eyes when she and her husband, when they arrived. And Herta's husband was very sick already. He had cancer. And he only lived one more month, and he died there in Varn. So we were left all by ourselves, my sister, and two kids, and me. From then on, we have been together till she just died. 4 years ago, yeah, 101 and a half years old. Yeah, and then they didn't send us to any camp, but they sent us some farmer in Altenhof, that was across the Warren Lake. On the other side was, it had been a baroness living there and to work. And when we arrived there, we had to go by boat across the lake. And when we got there, the manager of the farm, when he saw the bunch of women with kids and all arriving, he just threw up his arms. He said, what am I going to do? Am I going to be a nursemaid to you all here? You're no workers. So and then we were put into this place to live. That was awful. It was just full of cockroaches. First thing I did, I tied a scarf around my head, put on rubber boots. I said, you guys stay out of our room. I will clean, open the cupboard doors. The cockroaches, just the whole wall covered with them. Oh, jeez, I had to work. But it never helped. They come up outside walls and in the rooms when we were sleeping, crawling over us. It was yucky place. It was a nice building, fairly new building. There we stayed again several months again there. Yeah. Never had to work. Nobody worked. Well, there were not, because most of them were like my father. There were six brothers, and they all were either in home guard or like my dad, a politician, and the rest were all officers in the Latvian army. So when the Russians arrested, they arrested from our direct family, like my uncle's and brother's family, 21 people that night. And a tragedy that happened, I know, they lived near there where my uncle's place was. they thought that they knew that there was this place going to be some more arrests going to be made. They went and hid in the bush, in the woods, but never thinking that they would arrest the family. When they came back next day, the wives and the children were all taken, and they got left all by themselves. So, we lived in Oldenburg. First thing first, we were sent to work in Mecklenburg. First was Mecklenburg, on the farm. Again, they saw that we were not farm workers. So my sister and the two kids, and by this time we were just the two of us and the two kids, and they gave us a small room. How to say that? At first, to thinking that, you know, that they had to take in these people. They were all dispersed over the farms. Every farmer had to take in a woman with a child or whatever there were. That woman that looked after that farm, it was a big farm. She was a big woman, what men would call built as a fridge, kind of square, tall. And there were Polish and Lithuanian workers that worked on that farm. And she was scared stiff of them, because you know how they hated the Germans and they hated Russians. It was either they didn't have it. She always had a revolver in her pocket wherever she went on the farm. And that was in Mecklenburg, yeah. Schwinkendorf. And, you know, then the war started to turn and it got really bad, and the Germans got beaten and they started to retreat, and people from East Prussia were starting to come all through, you know. And one day arrived a little convoy in a carriage first came, you know, glass sides and all, just a real proper carriage. They obviously had been well-off people, some to some barons or something. And she came in, and they had a big, what you call it, a chest, you know, with clothes and things, and asked the permission if they could put it in our room. By this time, we had progressed already to the bigger room, because the woman saw that we were not quite there, but a little bit higher. So, and even the Great Dane, the dog, he would hate, he was trained to attack the Polish and the Lithuanian girls that worked there in the kitchen. Quite often he would jump and rip their clothes, you know, off and all. But for some reason that dog liked us, and like Zinter and Ivar, they were just kids still, that they were rolling on the floor and playing with this dog. So she couldn't understand this. She slept, and the dog was slept across her door so that nobody could come at night and murder her, apparently. He was trained that way. But in our room, he was just like a puppy, like a really lovable dog.
So the war changed, and the Germans lost.
And yeah, just a little story, and this, they were very handsome-looking couple, you know, the Baron and Baroness. Young people came in, and she opened the trunk, and she had a bow, what you called it, made of feathers. And she put this around, and she danced. She said, "I'm going to America, and I'll be the hostess. I will, and my husband has got long tails." Probably came to her, America too, somewhere. Where did I? My cousin, he was driving a truck for the home guards or something for Germans there. And he came just when that really was getting critical, you know, that the Russians were coming closer and closer. He came driving through. He said, "Now it's the time for you guys to get out of here. I have to go. I'll be further yet one more day. But tomorrow I will be back, and I'll pick you up and take you to Berlin. And then you can do whatever you want." And so that's what we did. We packed up, and the Polish and the Lithuanian girls, they were crying and hugging us and take us along. How can you can't take them. It doesn't work quite that way. So we went to Berlin, where my sister-in-law's aunt lived again, in Berlin. And we went to her place to stay. And my brother, like my the sister-in-law, she was married to my brother. My brother was a fireman in Oldenburg. I don't know how the Latvians became a fireman there, but that's what he was. There were a whole bunch of Latvians. They were firemen there. And the Berlin. And then we start to think about how do we get to Warn, Oldenburg, where they were living, you see. What was the story again? I hadn't had a chance to have a bath in a tub for months and months, probably. And it just, you know, no opportunity to have it anywhere. So Aunt had a nice bathroom there in Berlin. She lived in a very quite posh area, you know. And I was looking forward to have a bath. Perfect, I'll have a good soak. Now you all leave me alone, I'll soak. I had just barely got into the tub when knocking, banging on the door, come on, it is air raid, we have to get to the bunker, they're coming, you know. I said, oh, you're just joking, you know. First, didn't even believe because I had made such a show about having the bath, you see. So, oh, no, it's true, come on, come on. Now try to get clothes on when you are damp. I was running down the stairs to the basement trying to get my clothes. And it was a very bad air attack that time. When we later on we came out, like when we went in there, was a beautiful sunny day like right now. When we came out, it looked like evening. It was, everything was burning around, and the smoke was so, this, you know how it is when the red ball in the sky, you could barely see through the smoke. Everything all around was destroyed. No, our house was okay, but all around everything was bombed. And poor Fürstendamm, you know, that time was all the fancy stores and the church, the famous pictures you see sometimes in some books, that's all gone that night. And then after that, we got on the train, we got our suitcases again, and sometimes I carried those darn suitcases. I thought my arms will come loose here at the shoulders and stay with the suitcases, and I will walk away. And then we were on the train, and it was packed full with people. The bathroom people were camping in the bathrooms, and you couldn't get to the bathroom, and we all needed to go to the bathroom, and the train once in a while would stop and get out. Okay, the men were okay, they could have a pee, that was nothing. But now women, we didn't dare, because the train started up without any warning again. You had to get back on. And the kids couldn't go. They were so bad that their lips were all cracked and all, and couldn't do anything, you know. It was just, then we got to Hamburg, and Hamburg too was bombed so badly, that's terrible. But we had to get to Oldenburg from Hamburg. Managed to get on an army truck. Some soldiers picked us up and took us to Berlin, to Oldenburg. German soldiers. They were on. And then, again, my brother Carl, he had made some friends somehow. I never even, you know, it's just like a dream somehow. You just go and do these things, and I don't know how to explain that feeling. But anyway, it managed that we got what they called Behelfsheim. They were just homes, not real proper homes. Jesus, what's the not a tent? It was like a little house, but prefab things, you know, little. There were two rooms, and a little, but the outhouse was outside. You see, yeah.
And that was a DP camp, or no? It wasn't a town.
We always somehow. It's funny, you know, like one thing too, Hertha had brought along quite a bit of money because they owned a big drugstore in Riga. So she had a little suitcase full of money, so German money. So this always helped us. We always managed somehow because of that. And then we got together and we lived there. And eventually, when the war kind of ended. Well, they separated us so that Carl and his wife and the two kids could stay in that little prefab thing, and her and her kids and me, we were put in a house. We had two rooms in the house, but to get in our rooms you had to walk through the bathroom. So it could be very embarrassing sometimes. If somebody came to visit you and you were in the bathroom, they couldn't get in. Oh, yeah. That's the... But Frau Mitzermann, she was a very nice German lady. Her husband was in the army. Yeah, he stayed in the house there, yeah. And just the last days when the war was it officially over? I suppose so. I don't know. But the Russians still came, and they wanted to take some people back, you see. And there was a Latvian general, and he was hiding because they wanted to very badly to get to arrest him. And I know my brother came, and he said, well, could the general come and stay with you just for a couple of days? They will never think that he would be staying, you know, in a place like this. Well, he said, okay. And he did stay with us. And in those two rooms, and somehow managed to sleep, and he stayed there. They never got him. Now he's eventually got his own place, and now they had to leave and left Germany and left Oldenburg. Well, and then I thought, I was talking to my sister, and eventually I said, I have to look for a job, something to do, you know. We can't just live just this long, but something has to have to make some plans. And she said, well, I really don't know what to do. And she had went downtown to do some little shopping to get some food, naturally. That was only always the thing. Oldenburg did this. The mayor of Oldenburg did a very wise thing. Just before the Russians would take over, you know, or war ended, he opened up all the stores. He sold all the food. You could come. You didn't need any cards, or you could buy as much as you wanted, and cleaned out the stores, you know, the people that did that. And so it's had interesting things, yeah. It's starting to run together, all the memories anyway. Well, my sister had gone downtown, and she met the woman that worked in her pharmacy in Riga. And by coincidence, she was there. And she told her, she said, well, you know, Viola is looking for a job somewhere to do something. Oh, she said, I am just here. I am just going to hire some Latvian girls that need for the English Officers Club to serve. And would Viola like that kind of job? Oh, sure. And that's how I ended up on New Year's Eve, 1946. English Officers Club. And that particular night, Ted had been, he was in the telephone business to take over the telephone business in Emden the same night as I went to work. So he was first night he came to the English Officers Club to take for dinner. And I was first night serving. And that was it. We were married in May. that job was like any job, good and bad. It was really mostly good. When you are young, it doesn't matter lots of things. You don't take it as seriously as when you are old, that it becomes difficult. But we had to serve. We had to wash dishes. We had to wash the tablecloths. Had to do, you know. And then there was a German fellow that took over the dishwashing, and sometimes the dishes were not so clean when we before putting on the table, and we had a that's the interesting thing, you see. He was a Canadian, and the rest of the officers were all English officers. But they had told him already that this started already before my time already, that the English brigadier, he didn't associate with waitresses, you see. So, but the officers, they all waited till he went home. Then they quietly came back and had the lovely parties with the girls, all in the club. And they said, told Ted, come on back, we will celebrate New Year's. But wait till he goes away, till he leaves, because he doesn't allow the officers to associate. So that's what happened. He came back and he danced with me every dance. And later on, I heard that the English officers had thought that they're going to beat up the bloody Canadian, that new girl came and that he took over. I got married in Oldenburg, yeah? And boy, did I ever have a wedding. You couldn't afford here in Canada a wedding like that, you see. First thing, I couldn't get married in Germany because Germany at that time didn't have a civil law. It was all under military law. So I had to go to some other country that's still like Holland or Belgium or somewhere close by to get married. And that time, I don't know what happened to the brigadier, but he gave his speedboat for the trip to go to Holland to get married. It was a beautiful boat with five men looking after the boat and driving. I tell you, it went across like that. And it was an English officer and a Dutch officer, that like two best men would come along. And when we got to Delfzijl, they said, oh no, you can't get married there. You have to go to Groningen, which is the main city of the district, you know, the province, whatever it was, to get married. And when we were there, and Ted was giving all the particulars and everything, and he said, well, one of the participants has to be living here, and so she has lived here a couple of years. She doesn't seem, he winked an eye at that, you know. Oh yes, a long time. First day I was there. So let's say I got married in Groningen, and then they gave the permission, and we came back to Delfzijl. And they performed quite a nice ceremony. It was a horseshoe-shaped table and had two neon lights, you know, like a pink and a blue ring intertwined over the heads, you know. And then they performed the ceremony, and all in Dutch. Anyway, we couldn't understand what they said, but anyway, we said, yeah, yeah. And that kind of captain that came with us, they were just like two naughty boys. They had somehow managed to get bouquets of flowers, and they gave me some flowers and all and got back. And then I got back, and they had put a very nice, already nice little dinner party in the club for all the girls that were there and all the staff and us. And then they start to talk, and well, Captain Collins, he was in charge of the club. He said, well, we are closing up. It's war is over, and one of our girls is getting married, and the club has got lots of money. What do you think about good party? And yeah, they said, well, it would be nice to have a church wedding, you see. But, oh, goodness gracious. And then we had to arrange to get the church, which cost us a pound of coffee and something else. And then a German woman would sell her wedding dress for some cigarettes and some Dutch gin or some such crazy things, you know. And the first time I got married on the 24th, and on the 28th, then it was the church wedding. And all the English officers, except for one, because they had to leave one behind, but the rest all could come to Oldenburg for the wedding, and they all had Mercedes and whatever, very fancy cars, you know, war things. And the drivers, they really enjoyed driving them, that the Germans had to jump out of their way, that they were coming down a big speed going to Oldenburg, you know. The crazy things. And I think all the city had turned out, because this was the first Canadian officer getting married in Germany. The whole place was full with people. No, we went back to Emden and had a lovely party, and the brigadier that time stayed. He said, we should have had this more often. It's lovely. Those girls are so nice, you know, all the Latvian girls there at that time. Oh, just all the sex. Yeah, we have been doing this already for half a year. And now you think, too late. I married him, yeah, and then Ted had arranged with some friends in Belgium. He was the manager of telephones in Brussels, so he knew him quite well, and they said that I could come over, because Ted knew he would have to come back to Canada pretty soon, have to leave. So he was trying to get a place where I could stay till the brides could come over, kind of thing, you see. And I stayed with those people. They were very nice people. And just before Ted had to leave, just short time, their mother got very sick, and they had to, they needed the room where I was staying so that she could come, they could look after her. So again, friends in England, where Ted had known some people. So he asked them if they would be willing that if I stay for a month or two till I could come to Canada. And then I went over to England, and I stayed with these people. And the first night, see, all the English I had learned was from Ted, and this Canadian accent is quite different than the English one. And I first night I cried. I knew that Ted had to leave next day. I said, and you're leaving me here with the people? I can't understand one word what they say. Through their old nose up high somehow. But I tell you, we became very good friends. I stayed 2 months in England, had a wonderful time. They had a daughter about my age, and she had a boyfriend that ran riding stables. So we were horseback riding all the time, every day. We would go there, we would take parties of kids. See, grown-ups had to go with the children. So we would take the kids for rides, and we had lovely, lovely time. And I said, geez, because now we should be able to go to Canada pretty soon. And Mary and I, we went to London and went to the embassy, Canadian embassy, and asked about when would be a chance to go to England. He said, well, if you are ready, you can leave tomorrow. Somebody canceled, something had happened, sick or something, and you can go. So then again, tears and hugs and goodbyes, and I came to Canada, then got on the train, and you are one day on the train, second day on the train, you look at the map and you're still down that end, you haven't moved anywhere yet. I said, whenever we're going to get to Edmonton. Oh, box, yeah. Mm-hmm. And we had a wonderful reception in Smiths Falls. That was the only place from Halifax to Edmonton that really they had orchestras and they had baskets of fruit and cookies or whatever they had. They came on the train. And see, all the war brides were on the train. That was strictly like a train for war brides. And we were put together, like one with a child, one without, so that she could have a help. And the girl that I was put together, she had a little boy, but he had, I don't know what you call it, like a hair lip, you know, that. So he didn't look very nice. And I remember that the girl that came on the train and, oh, baby, you know, kind of, into her. And then she couldn't make up her face when she saw the child, you know, how deformed the face was, kind of thing. Until she swallowed hard and could kind of take on, you know. Yeah, we arrived in Edmonton. I said, this is a big small town. I said, where are the buildings? All small buildings and spread out everywhere. But the lights came on in the evenings, and I dragged Ted out. I said, let's... let's go for a walk. I want to see the lights. I want to see the lights. He said, you're nuts. Well, that was again, you see, Ted's mother had died just a year before the war ended. And so he had closed up the house. They owned the house. And he rented the house, and he put everything in the storage, all their furniture and things, and decided to go back once more to Europe. And that's how it came. Now we came back, but the house was rented out to Mr. and Mrs. Higgins. He was the general manager of Edmonton government telephones at that time. And Ted asked him, would they mind very much if we built a little flat in the basement so that we could stay there? Because you couldn't get any place to live. It was very hard. So and they allowed us to do that. And we lived in Mayfair Hotel on Jasper Avenue. Used to be Mayfair. They destroyed it now. But it was the noisiest place. We had a corner room, and the streetcar would come in one window and go out the other window all the time. Yeah, we stayed there. No, the child was born a year later in September, and oh boy. somewhere I got a picture of first day in Edmonton, because I arrived at the end of September and I had no coat. I only had a suit, you know, that's all I had. And Ted took me right away to Greer's. Remember? You don't remember? That was a store, fancy store, right by Capitol Theater. It was near there. And I have a picture somewhere downstairs in the album. When I there were street photographers those days that would take pictures of you and then give you a note, something, and then you could, a day or two later, you could come and pick up the pictures of yourself. And so I had a picture, I going where I have no coat, and then I have bought the new coat, and I got the new coat on, and coming out of the store with the new coat. So it's good. Well, how did we do it? I am not like some of the Latvians are very, very much patsy. I don't know. Well, the culture started with the Imanta Society, really, that we started to get together. And lots of them, they couldn't speak any English, but somehow Ted was very willing, and somehow he managed to communicate, and he was joined in all the parties and enjoyed himself. He was very good that way. Attend what?
Church.
Well, there's the church too, it's weird. Ted belonged to the downtown, that All Saints Anglican. He was Anglican. And then we, I didn't feel comfortable in that church. It seemed like too Catholic somehow to me. And eventually we joined United Church. And so Lutheran, Anglican, United, and superstition. Not too much. What can you really do in two suitcases that you were allowed to take? There's not that much. But the most thing that I really am sorry for, I had quite a lot of pictures from home, you know, all the pictures of the house and people and all, and the last trip between Hamburg and Oldenburg, we lost everything, even those two stupid suitcases that I had lugged along. And I had a big handbag, and I always had the pictures in the handbag. And one day, my sister heard that, she said, "You look like a midwife walking with that big bag." And so I put that in one of the suitcases, and they got all lost, never saw it, and never got any pictures. Coming to Garno was quite an experience. I said the ladies put on a hat to take out their garbage. They were very proper there. And I'm sure they expected that somebody weird with horns and tail will arrive, that's for sure. They all looked at me, but I have never felt anything bad at all. From all the people, they were all very nice and eventually came all around and all together the neighborhood. Very nice. No, that, Ted and I, he said, "Do you think we should do about Latvian?" But at that time it was under Russians and there was no hope that anything will change, you know, 60 years ago. It looked hopeless. I said, Latvia is such a small country and so few people really talk Latvian. If it would be Russian or German or French, I said, then it would be worthwhile teaching them. But I said, Latvian, maybe not. So they only know, yes, thank you, please, thank you, and Merry Christmas in Latvian. Oh, yeah, always, yeah. Always celebrate Christmas Eve to this day. And they celebrated too Christmas Eve. Three sons. Yeah. And they all got married. And now I have great grandchildren. Five of them already, and the sixth one is on the way. We celebrated already in Germany. We thought that Stalin had died. The rumor came out that he's dead. And we had one bottle of vodka from Latvia in one of the suitcases. And we opened that and drank that, and then it turned out that he was alive. It made me so mad. Very much so. First time I went back after that, it was 93. And when I saw how dirty Riga looked and what they had done to our farm that night, that was another bad cry, just like the one in England. I cried and cried that night. I thought it was just everything looked awful. And these are the pictures from the very first time I went back. And these were the friends we stayed with in Riga, because Mrs. Bagate, she was in Edmonton, and that's her sister's daughter, you know her, and they're all her relatives, and they were very nice. But this was the apartment building that Herta owned in Riga. She eventually sold it for nothing. And then this is the trip back to the farm on the way. And she's coming in August. She's going to be here to visit me. And that's the Russian woman that lived in the farm at those named Maria. My oldest sister had died already before that, but Maria knew her. The house to run down, and those tile ovens there, big. And as a little child, they had given me as a present a little hammer, a toy hammer. And I tried it out on one of those tiles, and I chipped it. And the 8 artists have bought the house, and they're renovating it. And they know the story. I told the story about that. They had taken that tile. It's in Riga now. One of the sportists that was visiting here, he has given it to her to bring it to me to Canada, this piece of tile. It's a stupid tile. Yeah, this was all the Russian families. You see, this our cemetery there was, the cross was on top here, but somebody had to break it down, you know. That was the church I was confirmed. Anita and Martin Yard, they're both going to be here. That's involved. I think it's always our flag that maybe. Famous resort near Riga. A little inn, country inn. And that was in the backyard of a table, no? and the castles and seagulls around Kuhn. This one? Hmm?
The other one.
Oh, the Latvian ring. Wedding ring, yeah. That's the regular wedding ring. The princesses had a fancier one. What did so awful? But the people, they were so happy to see us, you know, to come back. And the pharmacists that worked there, they were begging her, why don't you come back and take it over again and do it? And it's very deceiving. It looks kind of small, but there are 3 floors underneath. All the drugs and all the supplies were all kept underneath, 3 floors underground. I don't know how they managed them. See, that's the one that was in the charge then, 93. Oh, that I hear Anita, you know, this friend, she has gone to Valka to see before. That's my brother, my oldest sister, the sister that was here, Herta, me,